It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
Hello, hi. And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
We thought we'd come together because it is the 25th anniversary of Resident Evil, so there's a bunch of different bits and bobs doing the rounds on the website, doing the... We'll be arriving shortly on the YouTube channel, if not already live by the time you listen to this, courtesy of Mr. Resident Evil expert Ben Roy himself. But we just thought we'd go back over 25 years of one of the most talked about, one of the most popular... just one of the best video game franchises of all time. So we've picked three scenes, moments each to dive into. And we're just going to sort of like break them down. Kind of, I thought we should start with the game, the moment, the scene that broke everything in the best possible way, which is the opening for Resident Evil 4. I don't know if you guys remember the first time you played through it, but it's like we kind of take for granted the whole over-the-shoulder aiming thing today. But I remember the first time seeing that game in motion, being annoyed that it was on GameCube and I couldn't play it, and then playing through it the first time when it finally came to PS2, and just like feeling the revolution, just feeling like, oh, this is how games can be now. I don't know if that was something that you guys felt too.
I'll put it this way. This game accelerated at the rate that my sister got up here at a GameCube. It was her GameCube, but it was... my copy of the game. I just remember that first area where you're going in and all these little people just dealing with their chickens and stuff, and you come in there and then they attack you with their pitchforks. Dr. Salvador comes out of his chainsaw, and remember, it felt like 17 times bigger than what it was, right? Because it was one of the first times I felt like I could go around in an area and sort of like fight people off by stages and like, you know, go into a building and defend a building and run out. It was like everything to this point in RE was always so linear, so to be able to like go between buildings and hop in and out and basically scramble around and try not to get your head chopped off was, you know, heart pounding to say the
least. The whole like putting the ladders up and jumping through the windows and like being able to sort of improvise on the spot. They do that whole bit later on where you survive against the hordes of the dudes. You're in that one area that you've got to protect, that one building or whatever, but you get the little taste of that. Yeah, you get a taste of that at the very beginning. Josh, you're younger than me, so I don't know how old you are when you first experienced a bit of the old RE4.
Yeah, I had such a weird experience with it because Resident Evil 4 now is one of the games I've played and completed the most out of anything ever. Oh. But the first two times I experienced it via someone else's copy. For whatever reason, I just didn't get it on PlayStation 2. Maybe I couldn't afford it or whatever. But the first time I played it around my cousin's house, and he was like halfway through and he was sniping some Ganados off ledges and stuff. And I just thought, this looks amazing. This looks scary. This atmosphere is something I haven't seen. The controls looked like just completely different and so unique and responsive. And I was like, this is cool. It let me have a go. And I did one level and like it stuck with me. And then I played it years later on a friend's Nintendo Wii. And we would take turns like halfway
through. Your first experience was on the Wii?
My first experience was on the Wii. My first proper experience was on the Wii. And then the first time I completed it was also on the Wii about a year later when I got my own. And I was looking for games to play on it. And I thought, right, I'm going to get Resident Evil because I really enjoyed like the gimmicky aiming thing. So it took like years and years before I got to experience Resident Evil 4 as it was originally intended with a regular controller. But it didn't really matter because everything you just mentioned there like translated and still resonated. Like the idea of going into that opening space. And like you said, you know, you're setting up barricades, you're kicking down ladders, you're moving from building to building, you're under siege in a way that gave you like this free form control that just, you know, wasn't present in Resident Evil games before then. Like I'd played Resident Evil 1, Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3 and stuff like that. And I wasn't used to just how much agency you'd have in the combat. And I just remember thinking like, this is great. I could play this over and over again. And here we are, what, you know, 16, 17 years later, time later, and we continue to play this game every single time it's released or ported over to new consoles. Remember, you know, it's so replayable.
Yeah, I remember like figuring out you could do the roundhouse kicks and the suplexes as well. Like, I remember because I was still a wrestling fan back then, like freaking out when I did my first zombie suplex. Like, oh my God, there's actually, because the heads pop and everything. And it was a big old deal. Good.
Sorry, I thought Benroy was gearing up the same.
Me too. No, I just was, you know, just thinking about when in the earlier versions, I think especially in the GameCube and the PS2 discs, it was a bug where Ashley, if you knocked the Ganados with a door, you could then do a suplex. Well, you wasn't meant to. It was later patched out of other games. So, you know, that's a nice little fact for you about Resident Evil 4. But no, it was, for me, it was Dr. Salvador, the lad in the potato sack with the chainsaw that really sells that moment for
me.
First
time you get killed by him.
Hear him go, and you just know he's around somewhere and you fight Ganado and then he just bursts through them and the movement isn't as like smooth as you would like it to be to get away, but it doesn't hinder it in any way either. And it's just, and it's all capped off nicely with a nice little sort of like dinner bell and Leon quipping, "Where has everyone gone to?" Bingo, sort of thing. Like, just that sort of, just throwing in a bit of humor after you've seen your two sort of mates that have driven you in on a taxi burnt to the stake sort of thing. And it just sort of sets up the tone for ever since intense horror and then lighten it down with like a quip or a one-liner that sort of doesn't ever get old.
I was going to say, do you guys think, because we'll move on to like different moments and stuff, but like that whole conversation around like RE4 changed Resident Evil at the core so much, like the DNA of what Resident Evil is or was or could be and everything. Well, how do you guys like view that in retrospect now that we are like 17 years later? Like, obviously I'm glad that RE4 exists, but you can totally see that direction that they then went in with 5 and 6.
It needed it, man. Like, especially at the time, we could easily look back at it now and say, oh, Resident Evil 4 changed too much. They should have stuck with the tank controls. They should have stuck with like the original kind of premise and stuff. And yeah, it's easy to say that now, but you have to remember how sick people were of that, like at the time, and how driven into the ground it felt, because not only did you have like the three main installments, you had a bunch of spin-offs. Like, Resident Evil was this gigantic thing, and at the time you had a bunch of other survival horror games like innovating in that space, where Resident Evil was once the innovator. When they came to Resident Evil 4, like, it just kind of felt like they took that crown back by doing something different. And I feel like franchises are sometimes so tied down by their own kind of iconography and by their own systems and stuff. But what I love about Resident Evil is that it's constantly evolved. It's constantly reinvented itself, you know, whether you're going to Resident Evil 4, whether you're going to Resident Evil 7 or whatever. And yeah, sometimes that leads to, you know, not great ideas becoming cemented and we get games like Resident Evil 6, but in isolation, like Resident Evil 4 still holds up, and its blend of comedy and horror for me is still like perfect. Like, that game opens and that kind of like sense of isolation is absolutely there, but like Benroy said, they still got Leon pulling out these quips, and then in the later game you've got like this mad gothic castle that's like this roller coaster carnival ride where it just goes completely wacky, but it works. Like, it manages to toe that line, and I think that's what Resident Evil's always been about, even in its campiest like early days. You know, there's always been a lot of intentional and unintentional humor, but Resident Evil 4 kind of like synergized both worlds whilst giving us an experience that was inherently new at the time.
And letting you kick a zombie's head off.
Thinking of Ganados, mate, there were no zombies.
Oh, you're not wrong. I thought it was Lost something else, isn't it?
Los Illuminados is the cult which took over the area, but Ganados is actually what they are when they've been infected with the parasite.
Okay. It was a thing back then as well.
Thinking back to that, it gives me sort of like, I don't feel so like, I feel happy to see that. Even back then, when you saw Salazar for the first time, or when it was shown like pre-market material, people lost their mind. And it's like, you know what? Even back then when it was like, you know, magazines or whatever, people still lost their minds. People just lose their minds now, but you can just see it immediately. So, you know, it's just things like that just warm your heart. You'll always know that someone's always going to lose their mind.
Speaking of things that warm people's hearts, let's talk about the first liquor. Benroy, this is one of your first selections, the very first liquor encounter, I think from RE2.
Yes, when you which was subsequently changed in the remake, which wasn't annoying, it was more like I was waiting for it and it didn't come at that point. But yeah, in the very first game, at this point, you'd been used to every enemy was sort of slow apart from the hunters towards the end of RE1, the dogs that would come around. But yeah, the liquor was sent elsewhere. It could just leap onto walls, leap onto ceilings, but you could always hear it like, That was the noise that it made every time it would walk around, but you wouldn't know where it was the first time. And because, you know, back in the day, you couldn't just aim down just iron sights, you know, throw a grenade of R1 and, you know, no scope of the 360 sort of thing. And yeah, it was just terrifying to try and find out where the liquor was. And that first cutscene, the first little CG scene you see when it's sort of like, hello, is like, ah, you're like, oh, what the hell is this? Why is his brain on the outside? What's going on here?
I will totally throw in the when you go up against it in the RE2 remake. Like, I guess it's which encounter do you prefer? The original one where it's harder to track, or like it's in more pitch black in the remake, and it's kind of, it could be above and behind you. Like, they try and replicate the idea of it being in there with you somewhere.
I think, I mean, because, you know, it's coming in the remake, like, you know, yeah, RE2 original 98, well, I was like 7 or something like that when I played it, like maybe even 6. I can't remember what time of the year it came out. Mm-hmm. So like, this was like, this was nightmare fuel, and this was like a rumor going around when, like, the game, because back then when games came out, you didn't get them straight away. Sometimes your friends on the playground saying, there's a zombie which is inside out. You know, what do you mean inside out with massive claws? And you see, no, I don't want that. You're always trying to run past it because you just don't want to deal with that sort of thing, especially like when you're staying over your friend's house and the Furby in the corner keeps going off and chatting to you when you're trying to get through some stuff.
Yes, this is life carries on.
Yeah. The liquor, man, like, that was a thing that actually scared me more in the movies than it did in the actual games. Like, I used to watch it's at the end of Resident Evil 1, and it's at the end of Resident Evil Apocalypse as well. So, like, that was my first actual interaction with them, because I was too scared to watch my dad play Resident Evil 2 at the time, because watching him play the first one just completely freaked me out. And I never got far enough to get to the liquors first time around. But, like, for me, like, when it came to, like, the extra enemies in Resident Evil 1, I was kind of, like, a little bit let down. I really enjoyed the big snake lad, really enjoyed the big shark. But, like, the hunters, I was like, ah, it's not really doing it for me. Like, they're annoying, but they're not really scary. But by the time, like, the liquors came around, I thought, right, this is, like, Resident Evil doing doing enemies that aren't zombies and making them, like, just as terrifying and just as scary and kind of innovative and weird, and they're not just, you know, animals at a large end.
That's kind of the thing, because, like, Resident Evil is known as, like, the zombie horror franchise, like, the one you go to for zombie horror, but, like, they've got so many, like, creature feature, big, overblown, mutated things as well, which became a bit of, like, a parody, I guess, around, like, the RE5, RE6 times. Everything has an eye on its shoulder or whatever. Yeah.
Sometimes the T-virus just leaks out and a bat gets on it, and then you've got to fight a giant bat or, you know, a giant snake. It just happens sometimes.
You talk about The Simpsons predicting everything. It was Resident Evil who got there first with mutated bat things that we all had to deal with. Mr. Josh Brown, your first pick was dealing with Crimson Heads in the original, well, in the RE1 remake.
Well, what I love about this podcast, fellas, is that I just get to talk about Resident Evil Remake. Like, I just get to put it in every single one of your picks and talk about and contrast it and stuff, because the Crimson Heads specifically, like, I struggle to choose one, like, moment, but I think just dealing with them throughout the game completely transforms that game and amps up the tension, like, massively, because I love the original Resident Evil 1. I played that and Remake back-to-back, like, only 2 years ago or something, but it was quite revealing how in the first game, even though it is difficult, even though you still have a lot of ammo conservation to worry about and resource management and stuff, when it gets to the second half, if you're playing as Jill, especially where you have more inventory space, you have a grenade launcher and stuff, you can clear out entire rooms and you don't need to worry about them. So until the hunters come, you can just backtrack through areas and you're not having to worry really about enemies. And it makes some stretches a little bit boring because you know there's not much of a threat. However, with the Resident Evil remake and the introduction of Crimson Heads, which are more powerful zombies that come back to life once you kill a regular zombie, sometimes you never really know when they're going to pop up. This made killing enemies, quote unquote killing enemies, a much more considered thing, because if you wanted to completely eliminate the chance of there being a Crimson Head, you had to set the body on fire. And of course, you only had a limited amount of kerosene. It meant you had to carry a lighter and stuff like that. And so it made dealing with zombies this cumbersome thing that you had to really kind of commit to killing something. You know, it was a real-time investment. If you wanted to clear a hallway so you can get to a safe zone, you'd have to spend the time to kill them. You'd have to use the bullets. You'd have to make sure you didn't get hit. Then you'd have to go and get the kerosene. You'd have to destroy the bodies and stuff.
Sounds incredibly laborious.
It is, but in a way that still... It is, but because you're so scared of Crimson Heads, like, it makes it feel worthwhile and it makes it worth doing.
They're on another level, man. Like, they move, they run at you. They do massive damage if they hit you, like, 2 or 3 hits. Even, I think, on the easiest difficulty, you're going to get all your health taken off so fast, and you're going to be burning through green herbs, which you need for like later bosses. And again, like with it being fixed camera for most time, unless you go down the corridor with the mirrors, you don't really know where they are. And it's just, they come at you so fast, like a pistol's almost useless as well. It's just, you need to take that extra time and burn them out. But then you take that time to burn them out, and then other ones, like, you get through the game, you'll run out of ammo as it is, and then you get to the hunters, like, oh crap, now I should have saved the hunters. But you don't want the hunters and the crimson heads in the same room, because then you're just going to become an actual sandwich and you just can't do anything if you get about it. But like, yeah, the pace that these things move and the noises they make, they were just, it's like, ah, oh, we're all waiting for Resident Evil Remake, it's going to be fine. And Crimson Heads, what? That's like the liquor moment of that game. You're like, come on, man, what are you doing?
I feel like they haven't done much more with them since then either.
No, they all blew up in the Spencer Mansion died.
Right.
They should come back. I really wanted them to be in the Resident Evil 2 remake, just, you know, throw them in even though they don't really belong there, because it would have, again, made backtracking a bit more scary. But they kind of got around that anyway with Resident Evil 2, with how hard zombies were to put down anyway. And even when you thought they were dead, they could still pop up. But yeah, man, for me, there's nothing more scary than playing Resident Evil 1 remake and going into a room where you know you'd killed a zombie beforehand and you didn't have the lighter on you or something like that. And you're just kind of thinking, please, not this time. Don't come back this time. Like, let me get through this one hallway and I'll deal with you later. You know what I mean? Like, you're never prepared for it.
I wonder if they'd put them back into that. What's that multiplayer thing that you tried, Benroy, the new one?
Resident Evil multiplayer game 7. Yes. I don't remember its name. Sorry. Versus. Resident Evil Versus.
Yes, Versus, yeah. Whatever that thing is, like, they could do it. They could put it as some sort of, like, group enemy in that, like a horde of Crimson Heads that you've all got to deal with or something.
They won't do that because they've not upgraded them. They're only shoving stuff in there that are in the current engine, so they're not going to make a new model for that.
That will be too much work for that game. It's a freebie or whatever it is.
Yeah.
My next one down is from Resident Evil 3. It's because Resident Evil 3 was actually my first Resident Evil. Like, I'd played the other two at like friends' houses and things like that, but the first one that I bought was RE3. And I just loved, like, I mean, I again, like, we were all three of us, I think, were super underage when we played these games. Like, we're all like 10 years old or whatever. And I think RE3, was that 1998? Maybe
9.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right. And so, yeah, I was like, literally would have been 10 years old or whatever. And I just remember getting it and going home and just being terrified of it. Like, so obviously the reputation of Resident Evil at the time was like, it was this like taboo thing that I was playing anyway. But the specific moment, it's every time in that game that Nemesis corners you and you get the slow motion, like pick a direction type thing where it zooms in, all the colors invert, and all you hear is like the heartbeat. And it's just like you have like a few seconds to react. And I remember thinking that was such a cool gameplay idea. And just at the time, you know, like when you're younger, you don't really understand like how games are coded, how AI scripts happen and things like that. So it really felt like he could just burst out of any part of the environment at any time. And it's just, I just remember that there's one bit, it's right near the beginning, but you're running through like an area, there's a collapsed bus like to the side. I should say I'm talking about the original Resident Evil 3, yeah. And there's a bit where a bunch of crows like burst out the side of this collapsed bus. And then the next time you go through that same area, Nemesis comes out the side instead. And then all of a sudden he's running after you. And I just remember thinking that was just terrifying. Like it gave me nightmares and it was brilliant. And I know that a lot of people, you know, don't look on Nemesis too favorably because RE2 and 1 is so much like better paced. And 3 is like this big sort of like elongated boss battle type thing. But for me, Nemesis has that special place because I had all those interactions with him. Like it was the Resident Evil fear, like incarnate, like it is something coming for you that you can't take out. And obviously the movement controls, the shooting controls only kind of really factor into that because you can't stop it like effectively. So yeah, I guess what were either of your like first Resident Evil memories? Like did you both start with the actual RE1?
I'm going to jump in here and just barge through and not even let Josh speak. I started Resident Evil 1 and here a little fun fact for you. I looked at the manual. So I was playing with a friend because I was terrified. I was like, I can't shoot because I wasn't pressing the aim button before I shot. So I was pressing, and that put me off the game for a couple of months until I saw my friend go himself. And then he's like, oh, but you got to do this and this because the manual, like I'd lost the manual after like just looking through it once sort of thing. So yeah, my first experience was with the first game, being terrified and then not being able to shoot. And then after the first, which we'll get into in a bit, that first enemy that you encounter properly, like the Mr. Woof.
I just remember, like in school, like I said, Resident Evil had this insane reputation. And it was like, when you're a kid, it's like, oh my God, have you seen this gory thing that the Predator movie was like, oh my God, have you seen Predator? Oh my God, have you seen Alien? Yeah. And oh my God, at the end of everyone was talking about Resident Evil. Like, oh, if you die in that game, you get eaten alive by zombies. And oh my God, it's like terrifying. And everyone's bigger brother had already seen it. But like, it all added to that mystique of it. Josh, what was your first Resident Evil memory while we're on?
Yeah, it was my dad playing it. Like for some reason, even though he never plays games now, my dad used to just play like the PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2 all the time. And like, I was way too young. I mean, you were like 10 when Resi 3 came out. I was 4. So I was watching my dad play Resi 1 when I was like 5 or 6.
Just wanting a hug, but he's just like, no, I've got
Crimson Heads to fight. And I was just like terrified of it. I couldn't play it myself. I tried to play the first game over and over again, but I couldn't get past the first zombie, like genuinely. So I would just walk around. I would walk around the rooms that I knew were safe just to get a feeling of playing it. But then I actually tried to play Resident Evil 2, like around my cousins. He had that again, because I used to play a lot of games around his. And again, I couldn't get past the first bit as Leon. Like I just kept getting killed over and over again. But it was so scary that I didn't want to keep trying, because every single time like Leon went down, you heard like the zombies chomping on him, and you got that "you are dead" screen. Like it would chill me to the bone because I was way too young to be playing it. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until much later, I guess, Resi 4, Resi 5 time that I properly, you know, was able to play it. But I had such a weird relationship with it, because even though I wasn't good enough for them and I was too young for them, like I would go around my cousins and use his internet to read up on the lore and read up on like the stories and the characters and the character bios and stuff. So I was well into it despite not being able to play it. It was a weird thing that the movies helped out, because obviously I could get like some of the story from them. And then obviously years later, I returned to the games.
Well, like right from the beginning, you always had all the, like the star, like it always alluded to more, like you had all the stuff with Wesker and the stars, and you are like this team on this mission. Like there is this wider sort of lore that's even being mentioned, I guess, at the very beginning.
I read the books. I read the, I've mentioned this before in a video, but I read the Resident Evil Extinction, like book adaptation, like the movie tie-in. That was like the novelization. I got that personally sent to my library in my small town so I could read that. That's how into the story
I
was.
That's, wow. I mean, I didn't know there was a novelization of the whole
pretty good, pretty good.
I just wanted to jump on that Resident Evil 2 thing where I also played that round of friends I didn't own that one actually at all. And we couldn't get past that first part for ages. And the one time I managed to get past it, like after trying loads, before we just went back to Crash Bandicoot because that was much safer, got bit so much that Leon was just about moving faster than the zombies. So you had all the zombies like catch up, you're like, oh, and you make it to the gun shop and you say, oh, thank God I'm in the gun shop. And then you break through there and you want to cry, you go through the alleyway. And there's a bit where you can get on like, say, I'm going to say a toppled vendor machine, and there was a female zombie, but she was walking at you and spraying you with like hairspray, I think. I remember just getting to that point again. Oh, we've made it. We've finished the game. We've got this far. And then not actually going back to it again, like Resident Evil 1 for a little while and taking breaks and just jumping back to Crash Bandicoot. Because again, Crash Bandicoot was just safe.
The warm comfort blanket of Crash Bandicoot. Even though when we go back to it on the remake, it's brutally hard. Mm-hmm. Benra, your second moment was, how much is that doggy in the window?
The one with the waggly tail that bites you in the face. That gets you soon. Like, there's the first sort of zombie... especially if you play as Jill, you get helped out. Jill was always seemed as the easy mode because you'd get helped out by Barry at the beginning. You would actually have a gun, sort of thing like that. Like, you know, who would come into the mansion and not have a gun? Chris. And then, like, you get to the dock and it just ruins your day. And, like, then you know it's there and it kills you. But then you're like, what if I just edge forward and see if I can... And back then, like, I don't know, maybe people knew this, but not for me. Not for me being... a very young child, like, of like 5 probably, where you just want to try and tease the dog out, but it won't come until you've gone past a certain point, and just trying to run through and screaming and just like that being like half the experience, getting past that first damn dog. And then the Resident Evil remake, when they move the dog and it's a different window,
because they knew.
Yeah, they knew that you knew, and Shinji Mikami was just like, well, I dress up like I'm in the Matrix these days as I'm looking at him here from some promo videos, and it's just like, I'm just going to trick you all and make you all scared. But yeah, that dog, that very first dog, I don't know if you two ever experienced, like, were just ruined by that.
The chatty thing, like this, the chatty faces that'll be going out on Friday, it was like the most terrifying childhood memory. And my one for that is the original dog jump scare from Resident Evil. Because you mentioned like going back and forth through the same corridor. And I don't know if it's a certain amount of times before it pops up, but it felt like I just couldn't predict it. And I just remember like me and one of my friends like freaking out the time it actually happened because we didn't know it was coming, and grabbing each other for a hug to be like, oh my God, like what the hell, to try and react to it. So yeah, I mean, that, like, obviously that jump scare is iconic for a reason. It kind of reminds me of like, it's almost like the video game equivalent of like the Spielberg head floats through the hole in Jaws. It's just like something that we kind of all did when we were growing up.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, the dog jump scare is like iconic for a reason. Josh, did that leave an impact as well?
Oh, totally. I was terrified of the dogs, like, not just because of that moment, but I remember, like, you know, the opening CG movie for Resident Evil. Like, you get a brief shot of the dogs there, and, like, obviously that's what chases them into the mansion and stuff. And I should have been so scared by this daft dog that looks like it's just got, like, a load of mints on its head. And I'm like, nah, that's
enough. Ham slices, yeah.
Yeah.
They're literally exactly. Hand puppets now that go, meh, and just shoulder just the camera. That's all it is.
10 pounds.
As a 5-year-old, man, that was the scariest thing on earth. Totally. Let me tell you that.
Well, I mean, everything, your like childhood, I don't know, brain makes it all work. Like the acting, totally stellar. Like the special effects, totally believable. It's all great. Josh, your next one down is the entire Marguerite section from RE7, which I try to blank from my mind most days.
Dude, it was so hard to choose just one thing from Resi 7 because I was originally going to go for like the opening with, is Mia? I've just completely blanked.
I think it's Mia, yeah.
Yes,
your missing lady friend.
I was confused by the lady from The Evil Dead because I was just about to say, because that opening is so Evil Dead, like the 2013 remake when she's on the stairs and she's climbing up. That was just a brand of resin horror that I just thought they hadn't done before. But then they kind of extend that even more with the Marguerite section, which, again, I was playing in VR. In that entire section, that kind of like weird outhouse is just horrifying. Like, even though you're mostly fighting bugs for it, like Marguerite being around. And one of like the biggest scares I've ever had is when you finally get to the door where you need to like get through and you open it and Marguerite's there and she kind of pushes you down the stairs. Like, every time I play that, I know it's coming, and yet it terrifies me every time.
The thing but with then that, obviously, it's like, is this a sheer body horror as well? Like, just two words, spider vagina. Just, well, it's not, it's going to be there.
So with Marguerite's vagina, like, it's teased for a long time and you don't, well, you kind of like know it's coming, but then in her boss fight, she like properly transforms into this horrendous creature with these giant, like, gangly like limbs that are just bigger than like 6 foot or something, and she's all out of proportion. She's got this horrible vagina, like we said, but it's the idea that she can like arrive from anywhere. Like, she'll attack you from above, she'll attack you from the ground, she'll just kind of like jump on you. And in VR, like, no thank you, my friend. I'm pleased I did that in one go, just fluked it, just managed to kill her, because I wouldn't have been able to try that multiple times. Like, even now, I
forgot you did it in VR. Like, just having that stuff up in your face, like, the entire way through that encounter.
seeing her kind of like scurry away and just seeing this really long arm kind of like just out your periphery, man. Like, honestly, like that game's so good. I really need to play that game.
Yeah, RE7 is like a perfect package.
That section on Madhouse was just almost, just adds another level of just like heavy breathing, just like trying to not go near the certain points to trigger her to come out of the hole, because then she's just waxing you dead and you're just like, oh, I just can't go near the spider vagina.
Speaking of gross things, my number three thing was just like experiencing RE2 Remake's gore tech. I think it's just like most of us have, or most people who've played that game have an instance where they do something where it's like, oh my God, you guys did model like what feels like an entire human body, like the flesh level, the muscle, the skeleton, whatever. And I think for me, it was the first time, it was actually in the demo, when you finally get the shotgun at the end of the trial period demo that they put out before launch, and you just like finally get the shotgun. Resident Evil's known for its shotgun. So I was like, what's it going to feel like in the remake? And just dumping like a couple of shots into some like zombie that was walking towards me, they fell apart like in like sort of two halves. And then their top half crawled towards me, like sort of Walking Dead style, you know, when the dude gets stuck in the well and just sort of like all the tendrils come apart and the entire stomach comes apart. And just had this dude like crawl after me and I was like, that looks absolutely horrific, but it is, you know, in HD and everything's been modeled and oh my God, you've modeled this entire set of intestines. But then it's all still coming after me. I just thought that that level of attention to detail was insane. And obviously it extends to every other weapon you want to use on them. And, you know, you can, just the way that the gore works in that game, I feel like it doesn't get held up enough. Like, I feel like, you know, something like X-Men Origins Wolverine gets held up as like this incredible damage model for Wolverine himself. But like the lengths that Capcom went to, for me, that would just be this like next level thing of like, oh my God, this kind of redefines or the feeling of a zombie game with that level of detail in it.
I remember you talking about that before it came out because, you know, the weeks leading up to launch, I don't think I played the demo. I'm almost certain I didn't play the demo.
I think you were waiting, yeah.
Yeah, and like I wasn't watching anything because I knew I was going to, you know, love it. I wanted everything fresh. But I remember you talking to me about these gore mechanics. I think Jules must have mentioned it as well because he did the review. And I was just like, I need to see this. Like, you told me that exact story.
Right.
And I was just like, that sounds awesome. That sounds almost too good to be true. There's no way it could be that detailed. Then obviously you go into Resident Evil 2 and it is that detailed, which is the most grotesque thing. But it made the zombies scary again because they take so much punishment, you know? And then they just continue, like you say, crawling after you.
That like physics thing they do where like if you shoot their limbs, but like they're still like they're forcing their way to you, but they're dragging parts of themselves with you. Like that weird thing where it's like you can't tell where the epicenter of the animation is, the thing that is willing itself to you, like magnetizing to you, but all of their parts are just sort of refusing to be put down. I just think that's such a brilliant look, like visually.
Resident Evil 2 Remake is just such a joy for the soul. I just, everything about it is just so nice. And even though it's terrible and horrible and scary, like just, like I was, when I first saw that you could shoot a zombie in the head and it didn't go down straight away, I was like, oh, game, I don't want to play it. I mean, I've just sworn this, so I just beat myself out now. But it was like, you know, I became the person on the internet for a second, I think. But then
why was that? Because like headshots should be like valued in Resident Evil.
Just then everything zombie, like the head is how you destroy the zombie. But then I was like, you know what? I can take the fact that the zombies are a bit, you know, it's a bit harder than just one pistol bullet to the head. So that's all made sense and it works. And just how they fall apart, as you said, and like sometimes it's a bit delayed and you hear just like, you hear them tearing and their arm just plops off. And it's like, oh, what happens if I just take their arms off? Oh, they'll still lunge at me with their mouth. But then, like, what happens if I take their legs off? They can still try and get you in. Just trying to play all those sort of,
like Metal Gear 2 style mess with the NPCs. Yeah.
Permutations. Oh, don't talk about Metal Gear 2. Permutations of how knocking them out. Sorry, I've just been playing so much Metal Gear 2 recently. I just need to...
it's on the mind.
I just need to sleep. But yeah, like, everything about that, just the gore system from top to bottom, just... and. I hope when we get to 4 Remake and the Ganados, I can't wait to see how they react to them being dead. I hope that they're a bit more like they're in pain, whereas obviously zombies aren't in pain, they're totally gone.
Well, they can do some pretty twisted stuff with the like chest bursty type stuff when they burst off people's heads and everything. If you combine that with the RE2 tech, it should look pretty awesome / gross.
Oh no, yeah.
Benroy, your last thing was the Jack Baker section at the very beginning of Resident Evil 7 for your number 3.
Well, I was trying to spread it out a bit, and also like I've done 2 from the PS1 era, and you've done 4, the intro, which is one of my most memorable moments in gaming. But I guess Jack Baker, like coming back to Resident Evil 7, I've fallen out of Resident Evil 6. I only really bothered playing the Leon campaign for a long time, But for, and I did go back and finish that game finally after this, and after meeting Josh Brown and just absorbing his aura of that game. But yeah, the Resident Evil sort of seven, seeing Jack Baker for the first time and having that fear of this enemy you can't beat, and you know, being introduced to, I guess, the style of game that the Twitch people like to scream at for a while, and like actually now sort of getting it, and sort of like, but screaming for myself and not for people on Twitch, and just hiding and having it work. And even though Ethan runs like he's running through Marguerite's dirty dinner, it still like doesn't annoy me that much. Like, just basically a nice little game behind the scenes with Jack at the beginning, getting capped off fighting him in his garage and shooting him in the face. And all three of us got to experience that recently. So, you know.
Well, yeah, we did it blindfolded, yeah, which was a great way to reapproach it. But I think like in terms of like tone setting, it for me, it was very like Texas Chainsaw. Like, I think that's what they're channeling anyway, like the food scene at the end of Texas Chainsaw, and then putting you like square in the middle of it. And then, like you said, having the callback to like persistent enemies, like another style of nemesis. Because that's the thing, when you know, when you finally manage to have enough bullets to put him down, when you finally get like the shotgun or whatever, and you dump a bunch of bullets into him, just thinking like, will you just go down for a few seconds so I can move around without having you bursting through walls or whatever. And he does stay down for a little bit, and then he sort of Undertaker sits up and then starts to fight you again. And just like all the different, trying to figure out the rules of him, and obviously it plays into the story as to like how he's sort of like quasi immortal and everything.
He's so different as well. Like, yeah, he's not like a storage, is it? You ain't get away. And he put after you, just like, wee! And it's like, oh, go away, man. Let's stop being so unnervingly pleasant at times.
As you say, he's like, yeah, he's like a banter enemy. He's sort of like, yeah, they're sort of they're doing their version of like the Michael Mando, like Far Cry style villain, a vast style villain of like someone who's going to taunt you and be like super powerful and everything else. Josh, your last thing was the opening of Resident Evil 2 original.
Yes, well, we kind of touched upon it already, and it was just a kind of like a scene set, like so many of these openings are. I've noticed you doing this entire thing now that Resident Evil is just mostly really good at openings. Like, they normally knock out the park with like a great introduction. And Resident Evil 2, like, I'd always wanted, you know, a proper apocalypse from the series. Like, I loved the Spencer Mansion, but as a kid, I wanted to see this thing go wide. I wanted to see like a bigger scale. And like the opening CG cutscene of Resident 2 is straight into the action, where, you know, the vehicles are on fire, the city's on fire, and you're surrounded by what at the time felt like more zombies than were ever in like the original game. You know what I mean? It was just straight into it. And I just couldn't believe that sense of scale and like the sense of detail. Like, it's still, I still love the art style of that game, like even now, like looking back at it, like that distinctly kind of like weirdly 90s apocalypse, you know, in a city like style, it's just, it works for me. And it was just, it just felt like everything I wanted from a kind of like a zombie game at the time, you know.
And even the going lighting back and everything was like really cool, like just like you said, like the city on fire and being stuck in the middle of it. And it's like you have to like place it in the 90s or place it earlier in you know, zombie fiction, zombie video games, because we hadn't done that sort of thing a million times. Yeah. So it was just like being plonked into it, your childhood mind makes it more terrifying, and then you're just trying to survive like in the middle of the city.
Well, at the time, it didn't feel like there had been a proper, you know, city-style zombie outbreak, not just in gaming, but anywhere. It almost felt like zombies back then were kind of like treated as these more mystical things. You know, Resident Evil all the way through has kind of like focused on like, oh, they're like lab experiments. Let's dive into this weird biological warfare element. But this time it was just like, nah, here's a city on fire. You can explore it. You're caught in the middle of it. Just like go nuts with it. And that was something like I just wanted for a long time. And I was like, this has done it. This has given me it. I'm only like 7 years old, but I've wanted this my entire life. And here we are.
Well, for the most part, the zombie genre had like gone away after Romero's Day of the Dead, like in the late 80s. Is it late 80s, Josh? Like,
you I think know. It's late 70s or very early.
He's an old
late,
boy.
Oh, Day of the Dead is late 80s. After, 84 or something. Yeah.
And then it sort of felt like zombies had sort of like retired and just gone asleep. And we didn't really have much in terms of it in games. I mean, games were still like very rudimentary at that time. And especially like the Nintendo era, where like everything was happy-go Mario time, which I love happy-go Mario time. By the way, get your copy of Mario 64 before it's gone forever on Switch.
That is fair, actually. You only have like a week to get that before the 25th anniversary thing closes.
But which is the fact, like, I love the idea of zombie films, and I'd always watched what I could watch. Like, things weren't available back then, like, as they are now. You just type on YouTube, scene from film 12, and it's there. But, like, yeah, this sort of brung back the zombies in a way where it was interesting. Like, I mean, this Resident Evil 2 is heavily featured in an episode of Spaced, which then helped get Shaun of the Dead made, which then helped even propel zombies back into the stratosphere. It was like Resident Evil would sort of like helped coast them along. And the good thing about Resident Evil now is that they can bring back zombies and not have it be crap. Like, you think like a mainstream AAA budget zombie game was in 2019 when a remake came out. And like, if it was any other franchise, you have a lot of people growing up, oh, why are we doing zombies? And then they reinvent the zombie and make it great. But in that first game, when you're going through and it does feel like the whole entire world is sort of like melting down, even if you've got a sort of breakup, how did Leon get that far into town without interrupting? Like coming across a blockade or anything, like how did Claire get into a restaurant and not see anyone ripped apart? Like, you just got to sort of take that out of your mind and just, you're in the moment and you're like, this city is burning, we need to get out of the city. And then later on it just builds and builds. But yeah, that intro for what that game is like totally different to the rest of the game. But I just think that Josh is right there. It's one of the greatest moments of that series, and it just sets it up so well, especially that bloody zombie woman with her hairspray.
But yeah, I mean, I think like, obviously there's so much to pick from, like, you know, we've just sort of like glazed the top of it. But it is 25 years worth of Resident Evil, obviously all the main series. There's so many different spin-offs, pretty much a Resident Evil game on most consoles at this point. And Resident Evil 8 will do more breakdowns and things like that in the coming sort of couple of months. So yeah, those have been our picks from 25 years worth of Resident Evil history. Let us know your own favorite things down in the comments below. There are plenty different moments and scenes to choose from. But for now, this has been the Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Wesker himself.
By the way, we're renaming the franchise to Roysident Evil. That very is good. Roysident Evil.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye. I hear, right, from now on, I want this on the record. We're not signing off with me last, because I can never follow up anything he does. Anything he does, I can't do it. So I want to go first from now on. I want it on record. Everyone can know. Okay. So see ya.
I mean, I'm with you, but this is already the end of the show. So we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.